Blog Talk Radio.
Broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.
Imagine what these parents are going through. And when I think about this boy, I think about my own kids. And you know, I think every parent in America should be able to understand why it is absolutely imperative that we investigate every aspect of this. And that everybody pulls together, federal, state, and local, to figure out exactly how this tragedy happened. I'm glad that not only is the Justice Department looking into it, I understand now that the governor of the state of Florida has formed a task force to investigate what's taking place. I think all of us have to do some soul searching to figure out how does something like this happen. And that means that we examine the laws and the context for what happened, as well as the specifics of the incident. But my main message is to the parents of Trayvon Martin. You know, if I had a son, he'd look like Trayvon. And, you know, I think they are right to expect that all of us, as Americans, are going to take this with the seriousness it deserves, and that we're going to get to the bottom of exactly what happened. All right. Thank you.
Welcome to another edition of Neil Blake Online here on Rainbow Soul. It feels good to be here with you as always. Today we have some wonderful, wonderful guests with you, a distinguished panel. We have two of the Blake Radio hosts and contributors. We have Mr. Ted Terry. You're familiar with him, the Ted Terry Show. And he also has several web portals, including AfroCentricNews.com. We also have with us Blake Radio host Junius Ricardo Stanton. He is the host of the Cyberspace Sanctuary. And we have writer, producer, on-air talent, Mr. Bob Martin, who has paved his way here in the New York market. And last but not least, right now, we have Lee Davenport. She is the editorial director of HelloBeautiful.com, Elevate.com, and GiantLife.com. Folks, welcome to the program tonight.
Thank you.
Right, let's start off with ladies first today. Leah, what did you think about President Obama stepping out and making a comment on behalf of the situation that happened?
You know, I thought that what he said was perfect. I thought he struck, you know, the perfect balance with giving an actually emotionally motivated response and not doing too much to incite, you know, political uproar that would overshadow, you know, what the attention really needs to be on, which is Trayvon's death and his family. You know, it's interesting. It's unfortunate that he had to wait so long to say something at all, but unfortunately, that is, you know, the really sad political climate that we have and the very delicate line he walks as the black president of this country, you know, that he is the president first and unfortunately is black second.
Yeah, yeah. And like quite often, you know, our politicians, we always have to take a back seat. If you're an Italian politician or a Jewish politician, those politicians always stand up for their community. But for some reason, we have trouble stepping out and being proactive for our communities for fear that there's going to be some type of stigma attached. Let's go to one of our guests on the program today, Bob Martin. He's new to Blake Radio. Bob, what did you think about the president stepping out?
Well, I think that he helped, because he's a president, he helped open the eyes of parents, period. See, black folks, we have to think about things before we go out the door. And if you have kids, they should be thinking about certain things that other kids of ethnic groups don't have to think about. Is something going to happen to me just because of my color?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
And that's Terry? What he was talking about.
Go ahead, Ted.
Huh? Oh, okay. Well, you know, I think it's a good thing that the president made a statement as related to Trayvon, but I think we have to get to the point as to why we need to go back and really look at why was Trayvon killed. In other words, what law got him killed? And that Stand Your Ground law is something that we need to dissect and understand how it came into being. And you know, what pops into mind is ALEC, and that is an organization that I'll bring it up later on in the program, which is a body of individuals who manipulate legislation. So, but I think it's a great thing the president came out and said what he said to up the ante.
Absolutely. Make people accountable. Junius?
You know, quite frankly, I didn't hear his whole speech. What troubles me is that it's a tragedy. It's a tragedy on so many levels. Number one, we live in probably the most violent culture on the planet. Number two, that now we're seeing these ideological lines in the sand being drawn now about this whole situation. And so I just think that we're many, many folks are going about this the wrong way, and that is really not going to facilitate healing. It's almost a calcification of people's consciousness and ideology and all of that. So I'm anxious to see what comes out of all of this.
Yeah, me too. Let me ask you, the whole craze about the hoodies and everybody, you know, putting them on and protest and the fact that, you know, we as people, doesn't matter what ethnicity we are, we should be able to go out and dress the way we want to and not have to worry about our lives being taken like that. What do you guys have any feelings about the dress code, about the hoodies, or, you know, anything along that line as far as dress codes go, Bob?
Well, as far as the hoodies, I don't have any problem with people in hoodies because I see all kind of kids in that. All types of ethnic groups wearing hoodies. The problem is partly due to the news media itself and partly due to our young black folks. We've adopted a lot of the clothing trends that come right out of prison. And what the news media has done over the years, because Trayvon's killing is not the first. This has been happening like since the 70s. There have been books written how to safeguard your kid, black children, before they go into the streets. So this is still happening. The problem with the news media is that they always portray black crime usually as physical violent crimes. You don't see too many blacks on the front page doing computer crimes. So what scares people most is physical harm. And that's the way they associate young black images. If something's going to happen to them physically. So they're already fearing a black person that they see dressed, even in dressed in a suit and tie.
Right, right. Absolutely. You know how that is in corporate. Kind of piggybacking off of you, Lee wrote a wonderful article this month. It's called Our Black Boys Are Not Trash, from Emmett Till to Trayvon Martin. Lee, why don't you talk a little bit about that and what your motivation was for writing that article?
It was interesting. I at first was a little hesitant to join in the dialogue at all because I was so emotionally kind of charged and disturbed about it. But, you know, I'm from Chicago, and we learned in high school about Emmett Till, and obviously that's a story that many, many black people know and everyone should know about. And I was, as I was reading more about Trayvon, and I was watching it, and I was looking at it, you know, just like, this is just like Emmett Till. Like, it is 2012, and we're looking at a murder that has happened in the exact same way as a murder that happened 55 years ago. And I just couldn't kind of get over the shock of, you know, that we're protesting for arrest, that we're still waiting for his man to be apprehended, that we're trying to convince people and have to, you know, publicly show people that murdering a young kid for doing nothing is wrong. And I just couldn't kind of get over that notion of, like, in this moment where we have a black president, we have another Emmett Till. And so that was kind of what motivated the piece, you know, to show the parallels in that story and to just kind of spell out how antiquated and ridiculous this is, that we're having this dialogue in this moment. And what does that say about where we progressed as opposed to, you know, where we were pre-civil rights?
Absolutely. Junius, you've written a lot of articles, you know, around the abuse of black folks in this country, the killings of us in this country. Why don't you kind of comment on that a little bit for me?
Well, again, we live in the most violent country on this planet. The tragedy, even before this happened, when Barack Obama was elected president, gun sales skyrocketed, ammunition sales skyrocketed. It's to the point now, if you're tracking things like this, people can't get ammunition. And so you have a consciousness of fear, you have a consciousness of violence that is ongoing. You have a colorist and racist culture, ideology that permeates this culture from the beginning up until now. And so it's not surprising that these things happen. But what's even more tragic for me is that for every Trayvon, there's another young brother who's killed by another brother. So we get upset about what happened in Oakland with the BART officer, what he did, and, you know, how they slapped him on the wrist, or any number of these incidents that are still going on, and they're tragic. But even more tragic is there will be hundreds, if not thousands, of black males killed or wounded or maimed at the hands of other black males. And unfortunately, there is no real outrage or upsurge of activity to try to address that.
Can I interject?
Go ahead, Lee.
I understand what you're saying, and like I said, I'm from Chicago, and I have not only lost friends to, you know, gun violence at the hands of other black men, but classmates and, you know, all of that. And so it's something that is very near and dear to me, and I wish and hope that we could garner this moment to bring attention to those murders. But I don't really think that the conversation that we need to be promoting in this moment about Trayvon is necessarily that conversation. I think there is a broad conversation about the value of black males and about black life in general, but I hate that we're turning this moment where people are finally galvanizing. people are finally paying attention. People are finally talking about this issue and detracting from it by saying, well, you don't care when black men shoot black men. I don't think that's productive energy. I think we should encourage the collective to use this moment to make that conversation bigger and broader in a way of our black men overall, as opposed to, well, it's white and black violence or it's black and black violence. If they're all our black boys.
Absolutely. Bob Martin, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is that we do, I mean, I'm agreeing with both, because Lee made a good point, and so did Julius. But what happens is that when you get, we're bombarded, the propaganda machine in America is not black controlled. You know, we have outlets that we can hear different opinions, see different images. But for the most part, most of America is looking at general media and even including some of the major cable stations. There was a time when journalists would fight for what's right, be black, white, or whatever. But now they're just on the same page most of the time with the establishment. The mere fact that they didn't arrest this man, and now they're telling us, oh, it wouldn't have happened. All he had to do was just tell Zimmerman why he was in the neighborhood. He's not compelled to answer. They don't even have to answer policemen if policemen ask you that, let alone some guy you just see walking on the street.
Right.
So they're trying to give us reasons, pointing back to Trayvon, trying to say it's partly his fault. There's nothing his fault. This is a grown man outweighing this kid probably by 100 pounds, didn't need a gun. And the initial investigator of the case said that he did not believe Zimmerman, and all that was swept under the rug. And that's what people need to see. If you start there, then you know that it's dirty. You know, the whole case has been bombarded with just nothingness. There are plenty of DAs that have files on their desk that say they don't have enough to prove a person guilty. They keep the file open. But all those cases have been fully investigated to the point where they know they can't get a conviction at this point. They just let this guy bounce.
Yeah.
Good evening, Neil. This is Yvette Clark on panel.
Hey, Congressman Clark, how you doing? How are you doing today? I know you were in a meeting today passing some last votes. How's it going over there in Washington?
Well, we just wrapped up our voting. I want to also acknowledge the other panelists who have joined in on this discussion. And we just wrapped up for today, so I just wanted to let you know that I'm online and ready to engage.
Oh, thank you. Congresswoman Clark, go ahead. What is your comments as to, well, we started off with playing back the clip with President Obama stepping out and taking a stand on the whole issue. What's the climate in Washington right now as far as, you know, trying to bring Zimmerman to justice and making sure that there's some kind of accountability for folks just, you know, blindly going out and killing people in the black community?
Well, yesterday a hearing was held here on Capitol Hill. As a matter of fact, the parents of Trayvon Martin were here in Washington, D.C. The judiciary, the Democrats of the Judiciary Committee, along with the Congressional Black Caucus, held a hearing where we had panelists from around the country, from various civil rights organizations. Trayvon's parents also spoke about their knowledge of what has happened to their son and all of the subsequent actions that have been taken, moving towards a grand jury being impaneled and hopefully charges being brought against Zimmerman. But it's a constant conversation here on Capitol Hill. A colleague brought to our attention while we were on the floor that it's being reported locally in Florida that all the reports that we've heard about Zimmerman having been involved in this struggle with Trayvon is actually being refuted by video taken actually at the police station, where there's no sign of injury or harm to Zimmerman in the video. And so the whole argument of whether, in fact, there was a struggle that ensued, whether Trayvon had actually attacked George Zimmerman, is now debunked by this video that has surfaced and that is being played locally in Florida that shows George Zimmerman uninjured, unharmed, no grass on his jacket or his back, no broken nose. So clearly, you know, the massive cover-up of what actually occurred on that night, that fateful night when Trayvon's life was taken, we've all believed that, you know, there's a conspiracy of being created that victimizes the victim and that essentially is trying to build a case for this stand your ground legislation that they have in Florida. And so, you know, people are outraged here in Washington across the breadth and depth of members. Of course, there are members of Congress that, you know, adhere to these outrageous laws. They are, you know, proponents of the NRA and, you know, the right to bear arms and these stand your ground legislations that are actually in many more states than people would believe. And so we're trying to push for making sure that the Justice Department is as vigilant as possible. We're looking at other strategies, including a civil lawsuit for the Martin family, because clearly the standard by which the Justice Department has to judge a hate crime is extremely high. And, you know, given the legislation in place in Florida, it makes it a much harder to prove a hate crime or a civil rights violation than it is the burden of proof for civil litigation and first-degree murder.
Right.
Yeah, can I say something?
And everyone feel free to jump in whenever you want. It's fine.
To CNN's credit, they did an enhanced audio of Zimmerman's call to the police department, and this alleged person calling him a coon, calling Trayvon a coon, you can clearly hear it. I'm talking about clearly. And so from what I understand, Congresswoman can correct me if I'm wrong, if racial epithets were, if he gave some racial verbal language prior to the shooting, that would make it a hate crime. That
That's
kind
correct.
Of helps it fall into the category.
But
that
the other,
is correct.
But the other piece is that the 911 operator admonished him not to follow the young man and not to take any action. That's not what Town Watch and that's not what Neighborhood Watch is supposed to do. So he ignored the advice or the warning of the 911 dispatcher, and he ignored the protocol of Town Watch and or Neighborhood Watch. And I know for a fact because I used to be a councilman in my town, and I was over public safety, and we used to meet with Town Watch all the time. It's not vigilantes. I mean, you're working in partnership with the police, and you follow certain protocols.
Right.
And how are you standing your ground when you're following somebody?
Right.
I mean,
right.
It just doesn't make sense.
Yeah.
You know, if somebody's walking towards you, you could claim standing your ground. But how are you standing your ground when you're following somebody?
Well,
there's just so many things wrong with this case that screams, you know, racial hatred, hate crime, and a whole list of other things. It's just mind-boggling that they tried to, that this local authorities initially tried to stand their ground and not doing anything to Zimmerman.
Absolutely.
Well, they are certainly complicit with all that has transpired to this point. And clearly, the whole framing of this as a self-defense case is what they've tried to portray to the nation, to the community, to the Martin family, and to the rest of us. But that's quickly being debunked. Stand your ground is only applicable if, in fact, someone is threatening bodily harm to you, and clearly we see that that is not the case with this particular incident. So I think that, you know, the Justice Department's ability to get to the bottom of this and to bring the appropriate charges are becoming clearer and clearer every day. There's much more evidence of wrongdoing being uncovered each and every day. We were under the impression that Zimmerman was not even brought into the precinct, only to have this video surface with him sitting and being interrogated by police. So they are culpable in all of this in that they let him go after having questioned him.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I want to take a listen to the clip real quick. Let me just take a listen to the clip. There are some of our listeners who may not have heard the 911 call, so we're going to play it, and then when we come back, we'll keep it moving.
Central Police Department, line is being recorded. Sean?
Hey, we've had some break-ins in my neighborhood, and there's a real suspicious guy. It's Retrieview Circle. The best address I can give you is 111 Retrieview Circle. This guy looks like he's up to no good, or he's on drugs or something. It's raining, and he's just walking around looking about.
Okay, and this guy, is he white, black, or Hispanic?
He looks black.
Did you see what he was wearing?
Yeah, a dark hoodie, like a gray hoodie, and either jeans or sweatpants and white tennis shoes. He's here now. He's just staring.
Oh, he's just walking around the area?
Looking at all the houses.
Okay.
Now he's just staring at me.
Okay, he said it's 1111 Retrieview or 111?
That's the clubhouse.
That's the clubhouse. Do you know what the... He's near the clubhouse right now?
Yeah, now he's coming towards me.
Okay.
This guy's hand in his waistband. And he's a black male.
Okay. How old would you say he looks?
He's got a button on his shirt. Late teens.
Late teens, okay.
Mm-hmm. Something's wrong with him. Yep. He's coming to check me out. He's got something in his hands. I don't know what his deal is.
Okay, just let me know if he does anything,
okay? Officer over here.
Yeah, we got him on the way. Just let me know if this guy does anything else.
Okay. These assholes, they always get away. Yeah. When you come to the clubhouse, you come straight in and make a left. Actually, you would go past the clubhouse.
Okay, so it's on the left-hand side from the clubhouse?
No, you go in straight through the entrance, and then you make a left. You go straight in, don't turn and make a left. Shit, he's running.
He's running? Which way is he running?
Down towards the other entrance of the neighborhood.
Okay, which entrance is that he's heading towards?
The back entrance.
Are you following him?
Yeah.
Okay, we don't need you to do that.
Okay.
All right, sir, what is your name?
George. He ran.
All right, George, what's your last name?
Zimmerman.
All right, George, we do have him on the way. Do you want to meet with the officer when they get out there?
Yeah.
All right, where are you going to meet with them at?
If they come in through the gate, tell them to go straight past the clubhouse and... straight past the clubhouse and make a left, and then they go past the mailboxes. You'll see my truck.
Okay, what address are you parked in front of?
I don't know. It's a cut through, so I don't know the address.
Okay, do you live in the area?
Yeah, yeah.
Well, what's your apartment number?
It's a home. It's 1950. Oh, crap. I don't want to get it all out. I don't know where this kid is.
Okay, do you want to just meet with him right near the mailboxes, then?
Yeah, that's fine.
All right, George, I'll let him know to meet you with the out there.
Actually,
okay.
could you have him call me and I'll tell him where I'm at?
Okay, yeah, that's no problem.
You need my number or you got it?
Yeah, I got it. 407-435.
Well, obviously, Zimmerman was not supposed to be there. They asked him not to follow. And so, Ted, I want to continue with you. I know you were getting ready to jump in before I played the call. Go ahead.
Well, no, I was going to ask the congresswoman before you played the tape. About the American Legislative Exchange Council. Is she aware of that particular body?
No, I'm not.
It's called ALEC, which is a group of Republicans or a group comprised of rich folks, and it's an organization supported by Bayer Corp, GlaxoSmithKline, Reynolds America, Walmart stores, and Johnson & Johnson. This organization gets with lawmakers, state lawmakers, and they submit legislation to these people. This is how the Stand Your Ground Law was created, through this organization called the American Legislative Exchange Council. They do have a website. It's called alec.org. And they have a letter, a statement on Stand Your Ground legislation on their website, sympathetic to Trayvon Martin. And they are very much responsible for this law, Stand Your Ground law. I just wanted to know if you were familiar with that. And another thing, is Zimmerman's mother a judge? Are you aware of that?
No, I wasn't aware that his mom was a judge.
Is anyone aware of that?
No, I wasn't.
I had not heard that.
Okay. And
the
reports
are that
his
father is a retired judge.
A retired judge, yes.
Yeah, the father.
Yeah, this is what I heard. One of his parents was a retired judge. So tying in with, you know, the special prosecutor, Angela Corey, and the Wilfinger, why they removed, he recused himself. So there's a lot of things that we don't know. His parents didn't know that he was missing for 3 days before they knew that he was dead. And then when they got him back, did they actually take his organs out of his body? Because as all of you know, black kids are killed all over this country, and the parents get these children back and they don't have organs in their body. So it's a lot of things that we don't know. But I thought I'd bring up an American Legislative Exchange Council, Councilwoman. So if you don't know, you do know now.
Definitely. And, you know, we know that certainly there are a whole host of right-wing organizations, including the NRA, that have been shepherding these pieces of legislation across the nation and, you know, have a political agenda that they're supporting that is certainly against the interests of communities of color, of black communities in particular. The issue that I wanted to raise just very quickly with the panelists is that our black males in particular in our communities have we've built a tolerance to sort of their dehumanization through police departments across the country. I'm from New York City, where we've had a very egregious and aggressive stop, question, and frisk law in effect for the past decade that has had hundreds of thousands of people pushed through the system for simply just walking through the streets of New York. And, you know, these types of dehumanizing and anti-civil liberties actions, and this is not even by law, this is just sanctioned through regulation of police departments, have, I think, also added to a climate where young black males in particular are targeted and can be susceptible to police action, including police shootings, just because the rank and file have become so desensitized to the fact that these are young human beings, that, you know, in the race to meet the statistical data that they want to basically accrue, they're running young black males through the system, and it is being marketed as a preventive measure, and we're just not hearing enough outcry from the public at large, let alone the black community, but the public at large, including the black community, about what is taking place. There are single mothers who are concerned. Their children are now being stigmatized, and the likelihood of their encounters with the police departments across this nation is extremely high. You know, when you put that in the context of a vigilante action where the department doesn't see the humanity of a Trayvon Martin who's just been shot down by a civilian, we are really in a bad place. And I think that this is a moment in time where we have to say enough is enough. And, you know, we cannot surrender the civil liberties and civil rights of young black males as a crime prevention means, but that these police departments have got to evolve into, you know, departments that use intelligence, that have the training and sensitivity, and recognizing that, you know, every black male is not a criminal and should not be treated as such.
So do I hear you say that we should not be talking about race, but we should be talking about the judicial system itself?
Well, I'm saying we have to talk about race in the context of the judicial system, because race is the predominant reason why these young people are being sent through the system. It's a profiling that's built on stereotypes that have been with us historically in this country. And we have to put an end to it, because we can't have another generation of young people stigmatized, run through the system. The implications for the rest of their lives are far too important for us to be complicit or complacent in not speaking out against it. A young person who's arrested now has to explain to an employer who has a question on his application, "Have you ever been arrested?" That young person has to answer the question when filing for financial aid for college, "Have you ever been arrested?" And, you know, being able to justify why you've been arrested attaches a stigma to these young people that have people stand in judgment of them when they were just innocently going about their day-to-day activities and may have been caught up in a police sweep of some sort, just by virtue of being black.
Not only that, you have policymakers or lawmakers who pass policies that overwhelmingly discriminate against African people. We're all familiar with the disparity in terms of the sentencing guidelines for crack cocaine versus powder cocaine. In Philadelphia, under a black mayor, they had the Operation Safe Streets, and this is where a model of the stop and frisk started. And so what you had, and I can attest to this because I was a probation officer, and what you had was police had to justify their overtime. So they would run up on a corner, stop some kids, frisk them, search them. If they found something, whether it was dice or drugs or whatever, they would get arrested. And a lot of times they were just arrested under suspicion, no real probable cause. They come back to court. The DAs wanted our department to violate them, And I was resistant because I was, okay, I'll violate them if they're found guilty. But just because they got picked up and they were on probation, there's no real justification to violate them. And if you are familiar with Michelle Alexander's book, she talks about this whole process, this war on drugs, and how it's the new Jim Crow. And basically, it's very similar to the convict leasing, the vagrancy laws that go back post Civil War, post Reconstruction. So it's systemic. It's not just the police. It's not just the judiciary. It's part and parcel of the whole culture.
Well, to add to that, there's no group that's in power that will enact laws that will give them less power. I mean, that's just being human. You know what I'm saying? So that they're not going to enact laws that's going to give them less power. They're not going to enact laws where black kids will have maybe even playing field to their kids when it comes to education, you know, career, starting businesses and things like that.
Well, power begets power, doesn't it?
There you go.
We're at the bottom of the hour. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. We have a distinguished panel today with us. We have Congresswoman Yvette Clark. We have with us Lee Davenport, Ted Terry, Junius Ricardo Stanton, and Bob Martin. I want to go around the table. We'll start with Lee. We have the Congresswoman on the line. Do you have any questions or any comments that you would like to voice so that Washington hears some things that people, that the regular people here, you don't want to kind of get across to folks?
Actually, I think I just want to ask for a little bit more clarity about the Justice Department's involvement and what some of the issues are surrounding whether how much they can intervene and what they have to find in order to do so.
Well, the Justice Department has been dispatched. They will be looking at every aspect of this case, sort of shadowing what the special prosecutor will be doing in terms of gathering of evidence, looking to see whether the grand jury will indict George Zimmerman. And in addition to that, the FBI has been dispatched to do its own investigation of and evidence gathering. Ultimately, their goal is to see whether Trayvon's civil rights have been violated, and if so, to what extent does it rise to the level of a hate crime? And if their findings are such that they've been able to substantiate either a civil rights violation or a hate crime or both, they will then move to prosecute in a federal court.
Thanks, Congresswoman. And, Junius, any questions, comments, as we're wrapping up here with about 15 minutes left?
I just wanted to thank the Congresswoman because I was called for jury duty today, so we were in the waiting area, and I was watching CNN, and I saw Congresswoman Waters, and I believe another one of her colleagues, talk about certain aspects of this case that had been swept under the rug, such as the fact that the original police officer on the scene had recommended that Zimmerman be booked and charged with manslaughter, but that was overruled, and it wasn't brought to light until the Congresswoman brought it out either yesterday or today. And so if it weren't for the Congress people getting involved, a lot of this information would not be forthcoming, and their attempt to besmirch Trayvon Martin's reputation would be in full force, and there would be really no counterweight to what they're attempting to do.
Ted?
Yeah, Congresswoman, I want to address the special counsel, Florida's 4th Judicial District, Angela Corey. Do you know very much about her? Because she has put a lot of black kids in jail, and she's packed them off to adult courts, scoring more than 10% increase in young kids being put in jail. Have you vetted her as a really, as the Black Caucus looked at her?
I know that the chairman of the CDC has begun getting that information. He spoke with the state Secretary of State just recently, and she gave him her assurance that the special prosecutor has the wherewithal to make sure that this case is handled appropriately. So, you know, that's what we have to go on at this stage. And, you know, all I can say is that, you know, we will be very focused on making sure that the Justice Department does its job. And if there's anything that runs afoul, I think that we've got enough members out of Florida, whether it's Congresswoman Corrine Brown, who is from that Orlando area where Sanford is positioned, as well as Frederica Wilson, which is from the Miami-Dade area where Trayvon is actually from, running sort of a side investigation. I think that's where a lot of this information is now being uncovered. These Congress people have been very vigilant.
Let me say this, and I'll props to the Black Caucus, but I would love to see the Black Caucus really look into this sickness that white folks have about black people. It's like a DNA type of sickness that's been. I'm in my 65 years old, and I've seen it. I grew up with it, and it still exists. If you see a snake, it's a snake. And not all white people are, you know, are that way, but let me just tell you, it's there. And I just wish the Black Caucus would really look into that evilness that some white folks have, disdain for black people. You don't have to wear a hoodie. You can just be black in America. Just black. And it's just I don't know. Hey, can you identify it? What is it? I just would love to know. Life.
Let me just say this, my brother. I mean, I think that is the X factor for the majority of black folk in America, that understanding of the deep-seated racial hatred, bigotry, discrimination that is resident amongst us. Our challenge, quite frankly, is not to be emotionally attached to these incidents so that we get outraged and then we go back to our lives of complacency, but that we challenge ourselves in the way that many did during the civil rights movement to stay the course. And to stay the course until we are satisfied that this system is responding to our needs, our desires to see changes made in the way that black males are treated. As long as we abide with it, we're complacent about it, we become complicit with it. And the fact that there's no agitation out there, no constant agitation out there, makes people believe that, you know, it's okay because, you know, black folks are going to get upset for a little while and, you know, all of this will subside. I'm hoping that the outrage that our young people are expressing right now will channel itself into real social action on their part, that they will be leaders in transforming their own power, and that they don't see this as a helpless situation, but they see this as a situation that they can make a change with. And we have an obligation, and you're so right, as members of the CDC, to bring all that we have to bear in terms of leadership and legislation to manifest the will of black folk in this nation in the 21st century, in the century of the first African-American president.
Can I interject something, Neil?
Yeah, go ahead, Bob.
I just two quick points. We talk about the young people. When you look to see the colors in the protests for Trayvon's murder, and I will categorize it as a murder, personal opinion, but when you look at the protesters, you don't only see black people. And I would hope that there are right-minded white congressional people who are basically on the same side as Congresswoman Clark as far as looking to see that this thing is at least investigated, because they're going to automatically, if they put themselves out there, they'll automatically get more airtime on these media outlets. And then just to quickly quote one thing from comedian Paul Mooney, but it's very biting. When you look at slavery, black people were cooking these folks food, sleeping in their beds, warming their beds up, nursing their kids, all in the house. All of a sudden, black people are freed, slaves are freed. Now they can't live in the same neighborhood. That doesn't make any sense. And I always say that race, this propaganda of racism in this society is a cover-up for other things, just to keep the people divided.
Absolutely. I think one of the things, the death is absolutely positively a tragedy. It's a loss for all of us. I have children. I used to walk around as a child in the 70s, you know, going to get a drink and all of that. So it's a horrible thing. It's a horrible tragedy. The thing that is really so disturbing to me is the lack of accountability that society is putting forth towards police and the vigilante citizens. Because I look at it like this. And let's just stay right there in Florida. If the roles were reversed and it was a black man and he shot a white child, wouldn't that black man be locked up immediately?
They would have had him
caged up. We all know the answer to that, and that's why you know, this is a wake up call once again, because this is probably one of the most egregious cases that we've seen in a long time. I mean, we're constantly bombarded with you know, the imagery of our young people being dehumanized and portrayed as being less than. But here we have a vigilante action that has shocked the world. This is not just a United States incident at this stage. There are people across the world who are outraged that America is still, notwithstanding an African-American president, grappling with these issues of racial injustice. And so, you know, it's up to us to a large extent. You're absolutely correct. There are a whole host of people of goodwill of other backgrounds, races, ethnicities, religions that are willing to stand with us. But I think that this is something that we have to lead with, because, you know,
you do have to lead,
people
yeah.
can say, you know, what a shame, but at the end of the day, no one lives inside our skins except us. And, you know, there used to be a saying, I guess it was back in the 80s, and folks used to be a little upset about it, but I've always found it to be correct. And it's the saying, it's a black thing you wouldn't understand. And that's real.
Absolutely.
It's very real.
And we need to keep in mind, always keep in mind, that Zimmerman is not a law enforcement officer as well, because quite often the talk kind of ties him in to the police. He's a citizen. He's an ordinary citizen.
he's a vigilante because he went out.
Yeah, he's a citizen that's a vigilante. He's
with
not a law enforcement officer.
In intent to kill somebody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
because
we need to keep that in mind.
He could have done a whole host of things. If the police were alerted and he felt that Trayvon was such a threat, the fact that he had a gun didn't mean he had to use it. He could have just held him at bay until the police arrived. He decided that he was going to take this young boy's life. And
he had no business even trying to hold him at bay.
Exactly. Exactly. I agree. But he took the extra step of taking this young brother out, and that transformed him into a vigilante.
And in his own words, he said he's running away.
Right, right.
I mean, it's just tons of, it's not even circumstantial. There's just tons of evidence of what went on in his own words even.
Yeah.
And you just pile all the rest of the stuff right on top of that.
I'd like to say to Lee. Lee, you still there? Is Lee still aboard?
Hi, Lee. You still there?
Oh, yeah, she's there. Okay. Lee, I would love to see your organization do a piece on American Legislative Executive Council. Do some research on that, would you please?
Yeah, sure. I'll absolutely pass it on to our news team.
Yeah, definitely. And
we have 4 minutes. Let's go around the table real quick, not to cut you up, Terry. Just want to wrap.
Yeah,
sir,
go ahead,
Lee. Your final thoughts.
I would like to not go first this time.
Okay. So we will back it up. Ted, you start.
I just want to be able to catch a cab in New York City without, you know, any regression, without being looked at in the color of my skin. That's all.
Absolutely, Bob.
Well, my bottom line is, if you want to be the most peaceful person on earth, you have to protect your right to be peaceful.
Amen.
Absolutely. Junius?
All life is precious, and we should regard it as such.
Lee?
I think I would like to echo what the Congresswoman said. You know, I really hope that we aren't so cynical and we aren't so complacent to not take this moment as an opportunity to really try to affect change and really keep an ongoing dialogue and an ongoing focus on, you know, this conversation around race, this conversation around violence against our black boys and our community as a whole.
Absolutely. And Congressman, wrap it up for us.
Yeah, I'd like to salute my colleague, Bobby Rush, who today came to the floor of the House, removed his jacket at where he revealed his hoodie, put on his hood, and read from the Bible, and was removed from the House floor by the Sergeant of Arms. He basically stepped up for all of us to show the world that we are not going to abide with this type of vigilantism in our civil society, and that we've got a lot more work to do to achieve the peace and the best of who we are as a nation. This is a blot on our nation. It's not just about Sanford, Florida. It's about America. And America needs to wake up and realize that black folks have built this nation and will continue to be an integral part of its upward movement. And the lower we go in stigmatizing, racial profiling, and killing young black males, we will never reach our ultimate potential as a civil society.
Neil?
Yes.
Was there an autopsy done on Trayvon? Maybe the Congresswoman could answer that.
I'm not certain of.
Me neither, yeah.
Yeah, okay, because I want to know where Cheney got his heart from.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, right, he got it. So, anyway.
It's not a far-fetched
theory. Not far-fetched.
I want to thank the Congresswoman Yvette Clark for stopping by tonight. I know it's been a busy day for you. We really appreciate you stopping by and giving us some insight as to what's going on in Capitol Hill. I want to thank Lee Davenport. We really appreciate you. Bob Martin, Ted Terry, and, of course, Junius Ricardo Stanton. I'm Neil Blake. We're going to wrap things up now with a speech that Al Sharpton did last Saturday. And it kind of sums up everything that we were talking about today, and it'll also give us a little bit perspective on how we need to move forward. Until next time, everyone, take it easy.
About 2 weeks ago, on the last day of our walk and march from Selma to Montgomery, Attorney Benjamin Crump called me about the killing of Trayvon Martin. At that time, we did not know that much about the case. There had been only some sporadic press announcements. He said to me, as he said on the air that day on my radio show, that we need you now because we need to take this outside of Sanford. Why did he call? Because he was the attorney for Martin Anderson, the young man that had been killed in a boot camp in Florida. And I went to Florida, kissed him for Stephen Marshall, and we led the marches there for them. And he had told the family, if I call Nash Action Network, not only will they fight for us, they will help us make it national. We got involved in the case at that time. That is why we were able to bring the numbers that we brought there Thursday night, along with Michael Basden and Tom Joyner and Steve Harvey and others that worked with us. Now all over the world, people are expressing outrage. Let me, though, be real specific. About what we're dealing with. Thursday, when we were in Sanford, the parents and the attorneys and I met with the Justice Department and with the U.S. Attorney for that area and with the FBI as they've begun a federal investigation. There is a lot of misinformation out there, and we need to be clear on what this fight is about. First of all, we do not know all of the evidence, but we know enough to know that Zimmerman should have been and should be arrested. The 911 calls, if you remember, glad to see Bishop Riley here this morning. Thank you for being here. The 911 calls, the first demand that Attorney Crump made when we got involved and we joined him was to release the 911 tapes. Remember when I first addressed this, we said let's get the tapes released. The police resisted the release of the tapes. When we finally got the tapes released, we understood why they didn't want them released. Because, let me be real clear, they said they did not arrest him because he claimed self-defense. The tapes with his voice make it clear that there was never a basis of self-defense. This is not about self-defense. This is about a man deciding somebody based on who he was a suspect, and that he would take matters in his own hands. And that tape clearly says that. Let's go to the tape. Don't go to nothing else. I was growing up, you watch sports, People argue about a play, they say, go back to the tape. You don't have to argue about it. You don't have to debate about it. Go to the tape. He called 911. Attorney Crump didn't call. The parents didn't call. President Obama didn't call. None of us marching called. Zimmerman called 911. And the tape said, I see a man, he's looking suspicious. What is he doing? He's looking down. He's looking around. He's looking suspicious. Not that he's after me. Not that he's threatening me. Not that he's accosted me. He's looking suspicious. Now what is he doing? He's running. He's running after you. No. He's running toward the back. How's that threatening to you? Are you following him? Yes. We don't need you to do that. Okay. But you kept following. Next thing we know, he's gone. Now, that's the fact. Police get there. Young man dead. He's there. He claims he got injuries. First of all, why did you pursue him? You're not a policeman. You're not even a registered neighborhood watchman. You're a man with a record for assaulting a police officer that somehow got a license 9mm. I want to know how you got a license for a gun when you had assaulted law enforcement. Do you know somebody? And is that somebody who helped you walk away from a dead young man when you should have been arrested? First cop on the scene says in a written report, I did not question Zimmerman. Police chief says, Zimmerman told us it was self-defense. He was assaulted. Well, what one you gonna tell us? If the cop didn't interview him, then when did Zimmerman tell it was self-defense? And who did he tell that to? And if you got 911 tapes where he was pursuing him, you should have told him what you tell folks in our community. We have a dead body. We have a tape of you saying you were following him. Whatever you claim happened in between, tell it to the judge. You under arrest. That's what they would have told you, and that's what they would have told me. You do not let the shooter try his own case in the precinct. You tell it to the judge. Reverend, we got a stand your ground law in the state of Florida. Yeah. And the stand your ground law is to protect people that want to say they were under threat. I don't agree with the law, but the law has nothing to do with this. The stand your ground law has nothing to do with somebody pursuing somebody that they say looks suspicious. Had nothing to do with them. The only way the stand your ground law could apply is if Trayvon was going to use stand your ground. He was the one under threat, not Zimmerman. Then he says something that they're trying to raise the audio on that they think is a racial slur. Now, I listened to the tape. I'm waiting on the federal government to raise the audio. But I told him in the meeting, it sounded like that's what he said to me. And let me put it to you this way. If he didn't say it, tell me what he could have been saying that sounds so much like that. There are no other words in the English language I know that sound like that. So since you want to play these games, tell me what else he could have been saying. Just making it up in thin air. Well, Reverend, let me tell you something else. The hoodie is a symbol of this protest. They asked him about what he was wearing. That's where the hoodie comes from. But this is not about a hoodie crime. This is about a hate crime. The hood represents the hate that killed Trayvon Martin. We are all over this country preparing for a series of waves of civil disobedience that will be announced by us early this week. We are going to be hitting multiple cities with nonviolent protests at the same time. It is important we have sustained indignation. They think we are just going to be mad for a day or a week and let it go. They think that we just going to have a fit. There's a difference between a fit and a movement. This is not a fit. This is not where we going to show we angry and then go back home. Anytime we live where our children can't walk to the store and get a pack of skillets and an iced tea, it's time for us to stop and straighten this out once and for all. Now I talked to some of the young folk down in Sanford, and they're angry and justifiably so. And as Ms. Maris said, some of them want to just burst. I told them, I tell you what, anybody that engages in any violence is helping the other side. And let me tell you why. Because the minute they can pin violence on the protesters, then you validate everything Zimmerman said he was afraid of in Trayvon. What you got to do is act like Trayvon did, with dignity and pride and determination. We are not hoodlums. We are not thugs. We are intelligent, learning people that wear hoodies. We are not hoodlums. This boy's grandfather was a policeman. Mama worked for city government. Daddy worked. Take them on ski trips. This boy wasn't no thug. One of these Fox commentators talking about, well, mama shouldn't have the kids wear a hoodie. Everybody wear what they want to wear. Eminem wears a hoodie. Hoodie is a style. Hoodlum is a threat. And a hoodlum don't go to the store to get his brother some Skittles. Hoodlums run around looking for innocent people with 9mm and shoot them on suspicion. Don't get confused with the kid with the hoodie and the one with the gun. Now, Congressman, then I hear Mr. Newt Gingrich saying that the president shouldn't have said what he said. First of all, the president waited on the Justice Department to make their own determination whether they want to investigate. I have not spoke with the president, anybody at the White House about it, because I was involved, and I did not want the other side saying if there was an investigation and a case, that any of us discuss it, because we haven't. When the Justice Department made its decision, that's when the family and all of us met. And to our surprise, the president made a statement yesterday, which it warmed the heart of the family. What the president said, Mr. Gingrich, is that we must investigate every aspect of the case. And like any family, they want justice done. Whatever that ends up being, we will see. And if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon. That is not race. That is a man giving the state that he is in charge of his views of why we must not let no stone go unturned, no matter which way it goes. That is a responsible and correct position for a president to take. Had nothing to do with race. Race, Mr. Gingrich, is when you call him a food stamp president. Race, Mr. Gingrich, is when you said you wanted to go to the NAACP and tell blacks to get jobs rather than food stamps. Race, Mr. Gingrich, is when you said that we don't have role models in our communities. Race, Mr. Gingrich, is when you acted like we didn't have fathers that stayed at home. You confuse your statement with the president's statement. You need to give your condolences to the family, and I got a hoodie for you, Newt, and meet me in Florida.
Check out Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best, featuring entertainment, sports, nutrition, Africana studies, holistic healing, and celebrities. Listen to Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com, where you'll hear talk radio at its best. Rainbow Soul at BlakeRadio.com. Talk radio for your mind, body, and soul.
Broadcasting, broadcasting, broadcasting to the world. Broadcasting to the world, to the world, to the world.
BlakeRadio.com. Music for your mind, body, and soul. Talk radio at its best. You're listening to Rainbow Soul. BlakeRadio.com.